Chapter 21. Listen to the Wind. Sunrise creeping across the River Arunel found its way into the hollow not far from the riverbank, where Nynaeve sat with her back against the trunk of a young oak, breathing the deep breath of sleep. Her horse slept, too, head down and legs spraddled in the manner of horses. The reins were wrapped around her wrist. As sunlight fell on the horse's eyelids, the animal opened its eyes and raised its head, jerking the reins. Nynaeve came awake with a start. For a moment she stared, wondering where she was, then stared around even more wildly when she remembered. But there were only the trees, and her horse, and a carpet of old dry leaves across the bottom of the hollow. In the deepest dimness, some of last year's Shadow's Hand mushrooms made rings on a fallen log. "The light preserve you, woman," she murmured, sagging back. "If you can't stay awake one night." She untied the reins and massaged her wrist as she stood. "You could have awakened in a Trolloc cookpot." The dead leaves rustled as she climbed to the lip of the hollow and peeped over. No more than a handful of ash trees stood between her and the river. Their fissured bark and bare branches made them seem dead. Beyond, the wide blue-green water flowed by, empty. Empty of anything. Scattered clumps of evergreens, willows, and firs dotted the far bank, and there seemed to be fewer trees altogether than on her side. If Moiraine or any of the younglings were over there, they were well hidden. Of course, there was no reason they had to have crossed, or tried to cross, in sight of where she was. They could be anywhere, 10 miles upriver or down. If they're alive at all, after last night. Angry with herself for thinking of the possibility, she slid back down into the hollow. Not even Winter Night, or the battle before Shadar Logoth, had prepared her for last night, for that thing, Mashadar. All that frantic galloping, wondering if anyone else was still alive, wondering when she was going to come face to face with a Fayd or Trollocs. She had heard Trollocs growling and shouting in the distance, and the quivering shrieks of Trolloc horns had chilled her deeper than the wind ever could, but aside from that first encounter in the ruins, she saw Trollocs only once, and that once she was outside. 10 or so of them seemed to spring out of the ground not 30 spans in front of her, bounding toward her on the instant, howling and shouting, brandishing hooked catchpoles. Yet as she pulled her horse around, they fell silent, lifting muzzles to sniff at the air. She watched, too astonished to run, as they turned their backs and vanished into the night. And that had been the most frightening of all. "They know the smell of who they want," she told her horse, standing in the hollow. "And it is not me. The Aes Sedai is right, it seems. The shepherd of the night swallow her up." Reaching a decision, she set out downriver, leading her horse. She moved slowly, keeping a wary watch on the forest around her. Just because the Trollocs had not wanted her last night did not mean they would let her go if she stumbled on them again. As much attention as she gave the woods, she gave even more to the ground in front of her. If the others had crossed below her during the night, she should see some signs of them, signs she might miss from horseback. She might even come on them all still on this side. If she found neither, the river would take her to Whitebridge eventually, and there was a road from Whitebridge to Camelin, and all the way to Tar Valon if need be. The prospect was almost enough to daunt her. Before this, she had been no further from Emmons Field than had the boys. Taran Ferry had seemed strange to her. Bearlon would have had her staring in wonder if she had not been so set on finding Egwene and the others. But she allowed none of that to weaken her resolve. Sooner or later, she would find Egwene and the boys, or find a way to make the Aes Sedai answer for whatever had happened to them. One or the other, she vowed. At intervals she found tracks, plenty of them, but usually her best efforts could not say whether those who made them had been searching or chasing or pursued. Some had been made by boots that could have belonged to humans or Trollocs, either one. Others were hoofprints like goats or oxen. Those were Trollocs for sure. But never a clear sign that she could definitely say came from any of those she sought. She'd covered perhaps 4 miles when the wind brought her a whiff of wood smoke. It came from further downriver, and not too far, she thought. She hesitated only a moment before tying her horse to a fir tree, well back from the river in a small, thick stand of evergreens that should keep the animal hidden. The smoke could mean Trollocs, but the only way to find out was to look. She tried not to think about the use Trollocs might be making of a fire. Crouching, she slipped from tree to tree, mentally cursing the skirts she had to hold up out of the way. Dresses were not made for stalking. The sound of a horse slowed her, and when she finally peered cautiously around the trunk of an ash, the warder was dismounting from his black warhorse in a small clearing on the bank. The Aes Sedai sat on a log beside a small fire, where a kettle of water was just coming to a boil. Her white mare browsed behind her among sparse weeds. Nynaeve remained where she was.
"They are all gone," Lan announced grimly. "Four halfmen started south about 2 hours before dawn, as near as I can tell. They don't leave much trace behind. But the Trollocs have vanished, even the corpses, and Trollocs are not known for carrying off their dead, unless they're hungry."
Moiraine tossed a handful of something into the boiling water and moved the kettle from the fire. "One could always hope they had gone back into Shadar Logoth and been consumed by it, but that would be too much to wish for." The delicious odor of tea drifted to Nynaeve. "Light, don't let my stomach grumble."
"There was no clear sign of the boys or any of the others. The tracks are too muddled to tell anything."
In her concealment, Nynaeve smiled. The warder's failure was a slight vindication of her own.
"But this other is important, Moiraine," Lan went on, frowning. He waved away the Aes Sedai's offer of tea and began marching up and down in front of the fire, one hand on his sword hilt and his cloak changing colors as he turned. "I could accept Trollocs in 2 rivers, even 100 Trollocs, but this? There must have been almost 1,000 in the hunt for us yesterday."
"We were very lucky that not all stayed to search Shadar Logoth. The Merdral must have doubted we would hide there. But they also feared to return to Sheol Ghul, leaving even the slightest chance uncovered. The Dark One was never a lenient master."
"Don't try to evade it. You know what I'm saying. If those 1,000 were here to be sent into the 2 rivers, why were they not? There is only one answer. They were sent only after we crossed the Tarn, when it was known that 1 Merdral and 100 Trollocs were no longer enough. How? How were they sent? If 1,000 Trollocs can be brought so far south from the Blight, so quickly, unseen, not to mention being taken off the same way, can 10,000 be sent into the heart of Saldaea, or Arafel, or Shinar? The borderlands could be overrun in a year."
"The whole world will be overrun in 5 if we do not find those boys," Moiraine said simply. "The question worries me also, but I have no answers. The ways are closed, and there has not been an Aes Sedai powerful enough to travel since the time of madness. Unless one of the Forsaken is loose, the Light send it is not so, yet or ever. There is still no one who can. In any case, I do not think all the Forsaken together could move 1,000 Trollocs. Let us deal with the problems that face us here and now. Everything else must wait."
"The boys."
It was not a question. "I have not been idle while you were away. One is across the river and alive. As for the others, there was a faint trace downriver, but it faded away as I found it. The bond had been broken for hours before I began my search." Crouched behind her tree, Nynaeve frowned in puzzlement.
Lan stopped his pacing. "You think the half-men heading south have them?"
"Perhaps." Moiraine poured herself a cup of tea before going on. "But I will not admit the possibility of them being dead. I cannot. I dare not. You know how much is at stake. I must have those young men. That Sheol Ghul will hunt them, I expect. Opposition from within the White Tower, even from the Amarlin seat, I accept. There are always Aes Sedai who will accept only one solution. But..." Suddenly she put her cup down and sat up straight, grimacing. "If you watch the wolf too hard," she muttered, "a mouse will bite you on the ankle." And she looked right at the tree behind which Nynaeve was hiding. "Mistress Almira, you may come out now if you wish." Nynaeve scrambled to her feet, hastily dusting dead leaves from her dress.
Lan had spun to face the tree as soon as Moiraine's eyes moved. His sword was in his hand before she finished speaking Nynaeve's name. Now he sheathed it again with more force than was strictly necessary. His face was almost as expressionless as ever, but Nynaeve thought there was a touch of chagrin about the set of his mouth. She felt a stab of satisfaction. The warder had not known she was there, at least. Satisfaction lasted only a moment, though. She fastened her eyes on Moiraine and walked toward her purposefully. She wanted to remain cold and calm, but her voice quivered with anger. "What have you meshed Egwene and the boys in? What filthy Aes Sedai plots are you planning to use them in?" The Aes Sedai picked up her cup and calmly sipped her tea. When Nynaeve was close, though, Lan put out an arm to bar her way. She tried to brush the obstruction aside and was surprised when the warder's arm moved no more than an oak branch would have. She was not frail, but his muscles were like iron. "Tea?" Moiraine offered. "No, I don't want any tea. I would not drink your tea if I was dying of thirst. You won't use any Emmons Field folk in your dirty Aes Sedai schemes." "You have very little room to talk, wisdom." Moiraine showed more interest in her hot tea than in anything she was saying. "You can wield the One Power yourself, after a fashion." Nynaeve pushed at Lan's arm again. It still did not move, and she decided to ignore it. "Why don't you try claiming I am a Trolloc?" Moiraine's smile was so knowing that Nynaeve wanted to hit her. "Do you think I can stand face to face with a woman who can touch the true source and channel the One Power, even if only now and then, without knowing what she is? Just as you sense the potential in Egwene. How do you think I knew you were behind that tree? If I had not been distracted, I would have known the moment you came close. You certainly are not a Trolloc for me to feel the evil of the Dark One. So what did I sense, Nynaeve Almira, wisdom of Emmons Field and unknowing wielder of the One Power?" Lan was looking down at Nynaeve in a way she did not like. Surprised and speculative, it seemed to her, though nothing had changed about his face but his eyes. Egwene was special. She'd always known that. Egwene would make a fine wisdom. "They're working together," she thought, "trying to put me off balance." "I won't listen to any more of this."
You must listen," Moiraine said firmly. "I had my suspicions in Emmons Field even before I met you. People told me how upset the wisdom was that she had not predicted the hard winter and the lateness of spring. They told me how good she was at foretelling weather, at telling the crops. They told me how wonderful her cures were, how she sometimes healed injuries that should have been crippling so well there was barely a scar and not a limp or a twinge. The only ill word I heard about you was from a few who thought you too young for the responsibility, and that only strengthened my suspicions. So much skill, so young. Mistress Baron taught me well." She tried looking at Lan, but his eyes still made her uncomfortable, so she settled for staring over the Aes Sedai's head at the river. "How dare the village gossip in front of an outlander?" "Who said I was too young?" she demanded. Moiraine smiled, refusing to be diverted. "Unlike most women who claim to listen to the wind, you actually can, sometimes. Oh, it has nothing to do with the wind, of course. It is of air and water. It is not something you need to be taught. It was born into you, just as it was born into Egwene. But you have learned to handle it, which she still has to learn. 2 minutes after I came face to face with you, I knew. Do you remember how I suddenly asked you if you were the wisdom? Why, do you think? There was nothing to distinguish you from any other pretty young woman getting ready for festival. Even looking for a young wisdom, I expected someone half again your age." Nynaeve remembered that meeting all too well. This woman, more self-possessed than anyone in the women's circle, in a dress more beautiful than any she had ever seen, addressing her as a child. Then Moiraine had suddenly blinked, as if surprised, and out of a clear sky asked. She licked lips, gone abruptly dry. They were both looking at her, the warder's face as unreadable as a stone, the Aes Sedai's sympathetic yet intent. Nynaeve shook her head. "No!" No, it's impossible. I would know. You are just trying to trick me, and it will not work.
Of course you do not know, Moiraine said soothingly. Why should you even suspect? All of your life you have heard about listening to the wind. In any case, you would as soon announce to all of Emmons Field that you were a dark friend as admit to yourself, even in the deepest recesses of your mind, that you have anything to do with the One Power, or the dreaded Aes Sedai. Amusement flitted across Moiraine's face. But I can tell you how it began. I don't want to hear any more of your lies, she said, but the Aes Sedai went right on. Perhaps as much as 8 or 10 years ago, the age varies but always comes young, there was something you wanted more than anything else in the world, something you needed, and you got it. A branch suddenly falling where you could pull yourself out of a pond instead of drowning, a friend or a pet getting well when everyone thought they would die. You felt nothing special at the time, but 1 week or 10 days later you had your first reaction to touching the true source. Perhaps fevers and chills that came on suddenly and put you to bed, then disappeared after only a few hours. None of the reactions, and they vary, lasts more than a few hours. Headaches and numbness and exhilaration all mixed together, and you taking foolish chances or acting giddy. A spell of dizziness when you tripped and stumbled whenever you tried to move, when you could not say a sentence without your tongue mangling half the words. There are others. Do you remember? Nynaeve sat down hard on the ground. Her legs would not hold her up. She remembered, but she shook her head anyway. It had to be coincidence. Or else Moiraine had asked more questions in Emmons Field than she had thought. The Aes Sedai had asked a great many questions. It had to be that. Lan offered a hand, but she did not even see it. I will go further, Moiraine said when Nynaeve kept silent. You used the power to heal either Perrin or Egwene at some time. An affinity develops. You can sense the presence of someone you've healed. In Bearlon, you came straight to the Stag and Lion, though it was not the nearest inn to any gate by which you could have entered. Of the people from Emmons Field, only Perrin and Egwene were at the inn when you arrived. Was it Perrin or Egwene, or both? Egwene, Nynaeve mumbled. She'd always taken it for granted that she could sometimes tell who was approaching her even when she could not see them. Not until now had she realized that it was always someone on whom her cures had worked almost miraculously well. And she had always known when the medicine would work beyond expectations, always felt the certainty when she said the crops would be especially good or that the rains would come early or late. That was the way she thought it was supposed to be. Not all wisdoms could listen to the wind, but the best could. That was what Mistress Baron always said, just as she said Nynaeve would be one of the best. She had breakbone fever. She kept her head down and spoke to the ground. I was still apprentice to Mistress Baron, and she set me to watch Egwene. I was young, and I didn't know the wisdom had everything well in hand. It's terrible to watch, breakbone fever. The child was soaked with sweat, groaning and twisting until I could not understand why I didn't hear her bones snapping. Mistress Baron had told me the fever would break in another day, 2 at the most, but I thought she was doing me a kindness. I thought Egwene was dying. I used to look after her sometimes when she was a toddler, when her mother was busy, and I started crying because I was going to have to watch her die. When Mistress Baron came back an hour later, the fever had broken. She was surprised, but she made over me more than Egwene. I always thought she believed I'd given the child something and was too frightened to admit it. I always thought she was trying to comfort me, to make sure I knew I hadn't hurt Egwene. 1 week later, I fell on the floor in her sitting room, shaking and burning up by turns. She bundled me into bed, but by supper time it was gone. She dropped her head in her hands as she finished speaking. The Aes Sedai chose a good example, she thought. Light burn her. Using the power like an Aes Sedai. A filthy, dark friend Aes Sedai. You were very lucky, Moiraine said, and Nynaeve sat erect. Lan stepped back as if what they talked about was none of his business, and busied himself with Mandarb's saddle, not even glancing at them. Lucky? You have managed a crude control over the power,
even if touching the true source still comes at random. If you had not, it would have killed you eventually. As it will, in all probability, kill Egwene if you manage to stop her from going to Tar Valon.
If I learned to control it,
Nynaeve swallowed hard. It was like admitting all over again that she could do what the Aes Sedai said. If I learned to control it, so can she. There is no need for her to go to Tar Valon and get mixed up in your intrigues.
Moiraine shook her head slowly.
Aes Sedai search for girls who can touch the true source unguided just as assiduously as we search for men who can do so. It is not a desire to increase our numbers, or at least not only that. Nor is it a fear that those women will misuse the power. The rough control of the power they may gain if the light shines on them is rarely enough to do any great damage, especially since the actual touching of the source is beyond their control without a teacher and comes only randomly. And, of course, they do not suffer the madness that drives men to evil or twisted things. We want to save their lives, the lives of those who never do manage any control at all.
The fever and chills I had couldn't kill anyone, Nynaeve insisted. Not in 3 or 4 hours. I had the other things, too, and they couldn't kill anybody either, and they stopped after a few months. What about that?
Those were only reactions, Moiraine said patiently. Each time the reaction comes closer to the actual touching of the source until the two happen almost together. After that, there are no more reactions that can be seen, but it is as if a clock has begun ticking. 1 year? 2 years? I know one woman who lasted 5 years. Of 4 who have the inborn ability that you and Egwene have, 3 die if we do not find them and train them. It is not as horrible a death as the men die, but neither is it pretty, if any death can be called so. Convulsions, screaming. It takes days, and once it begins, there is nothing that can be done to stop it, not by all the Aes Sedai and Tar Valon together.
You're lying! All those questions you asked in Emmons Field. You found out about Egwene's fever breaking, about my fever and chills, all of it. You made all of this up.
You know I did not, Moiraine said gently. Reluctantly, more reluctantly than she had ever done anything in her life, Nynaeve nodded. It had been a last stubborn effort to deny what was plain, and there was never any good in that, however unpleasant it might be. Mistress Baron's first apprentice had died the way the Aes Sedai said when Nynaeve was still playing with dolls, and there'd been a young woman in Devon Ride only a few years ago. She had been a wisdom's apprentice, too, one who could listen to the wind.
You have great potential, I think, Moiraine continued. With training, you might become even more powerful than Egwene, and I believe she can become one of the most powerful Aes Sedai we have seen in centuries.
Nynaeve pushed herself back from the Aes Sedai as she would have from a viper.
No! I'll have nothing to do with...
With what?
Myself?
She slumped, and her voice became hesitant.
I would ask you not to tell anyone about this. Please?
The word nearly stuck in her throat. She would rather Trollocs had appeared than she had been forced to say please to this woman. But Moiraine only nodded assent, and some of her spirit returned.
None of this explains what you want with Rand and Matt and Perrin.
The Dark One wants them, Moiraine replied. If the Dark One wants a thing, I oppose it. Can there be a simpler reason or a better? She finished her tea, watching Nynaeve over the rim of her cup.
Lan, we must be going. South, I think.
I fear the wisdom will not be accompanying us.
Nynaeve's mouth tightened at the way the Aes Sedai said, wisdom. It seemed to suggest she was turning her back on great things in favor of something petty.
She doesn't want me along. She's trying to put my back up, so I'll go back home and leave them alone with her.
Oh yes, I will be going with you. You cannot keep me from it.
No one will try to keep you from it, Lan said as he rejoined them.
He emptied the tea kettle over the fire and stirred the ashes with a stick.
A part of the pattern, he said to Moiraine.
Perhaps so, she replied thoughtfully.
I should have spoken to Min again.
You see, Nynaeve, you are welcome to come.
There was a hesitation in the way Lan said her name, a hint of an unspoken Sedai after it.
Nynaeve bristled, taking it for mockery, and bristled too at the way they spoke of things in front of her, things she knew nothing about, without the courtesy of an explanation, but she would not give them the satisfaction of asking.
The warder went on preparing for departure, his economical motions so sure and swift that he was quickly done, saddlebags, blankets, and all fastened behind the saddles of Mandarb and Aldib.
I will fetch your horse, he told Nynaeve, as he finished with the last saddle tie.
He started up the riverbank, and she allowed herself a small smile. After the way she had watched him undiscovered, he was going to try to find her horse unaided. He would learn that she left little in the way of tracks when she was stalking. It would be a pleasure when he came back empty-handed.
Why south? She asked Moraine. I heard you say one of the boys is across the river, and how do you know?
I gave each of the boys a token. It created a bond of sorts between them and me. So long as they are alive and have those coins in their possession, I will be able to find them.
Nynaeve's eyes turned in the direction the warder had gone, and Moiraine shook her head.
Not like that. It only allows me to discover if they still live, and find them should we become separated.
Prudent, do you not think, under the circumstances?
I don't like anything that connects you with anyone from Emmons Field, Nynaeve said stubbornly. But if it will help us find them,
it will.
I would gather the young man across the river first if I could. For a moment, frustration tinged the Aes Sedai's voice. He is only a few miles from us, but I cannot afford to take the time. He should make his way down to Whitebridge safely now that the Trollocs have gone. The two who went downriver may need me more. They have lost their coins, and Myrdral are either pursuing them or else trying to intercept us all at Whitebridge. She sighed. I must take care of the greatest need first.
The Myrdral could have killed them, Nynaeve said.
Moraine shook her head slightly, denying the suggestion as if it were too trivial to be considered. Nynaeve's mouth tightened.
Where is Egwene, then? You haven't even mentioned her.
I do not know, Moiraine admitted, but I hope that she is safe.
You don't know? You hope? All that talk about saving her life by taking her to Tar Valon, and she could be dead for all you know.
I could look for her and allow the Myrdral more time before I arrive to help the two young men who went south. It is them the Dark One wants, not her. They would not bother with Egwene, so long as their true quarry remains uncaught.
Nynaeve remembered her own encounter, but she refused to admit the sense of what Moiraine said.
So the best you have to offer is that she may be alive, if she was lucky. Alive, maybe alone, frightened, even hurt, days from the nearest village or help except for us, and you intend to leave her.
She may just as easily be safe with the boy across the river, or on her way to Whitebridge with the other two. In any case, there are no longer Trollocs here to threaten her, and she is strong, intelligent, and quite capable of finding her way to Whitebridge alone if need be. Would you rather stay on the chance that she may need help, or do you want to try to help those we know are in need? Would you have me search for her and let the boys and the Myrdral who are surely pursuing them go?
As much as I hope for Egwene's safety, Nynaeve, I fight against the Dark One. And for now, that sets my path.
Moiraine's calm never slipped while she laid out the horrible alternatives. Nynaeve wanted to scream at her. Blinking back tears, she turned her face so the Aes Sedai could not see.
Light. A wisdom is supposed to look after all of her people. Why do I have to choose like this?
Here is Lan, Moiraine said, rising and settling her cloak about her shoulders. To Nynaeve, it was only a tiny blow as the warder led her horse out of the trees. Still, her lips thinned when he handed her the reins. It would have been a small boost to her spirits if there had been even a trace of gloating on his face instead of that insufferable stony calm. His eyes widened when he saw her face, and she turned her back on him to wipe tears from her cheeks. How dare he mock my crying?
Are you coming, Wisdom? Moiraine asked coolly.
She took one last slow look at the forest, wondering if Egwene was out there before sadly mounting her horse. Lan and Moiraine were already in their saddles, turning their horses south. She followed stiff-backed, refusing to let herself look back. Instead, she kept her eyes on Moiraine. The Aes Sedai was so confident in her power and her plans, she thought, but if they did not find Egwene and the boys, all of them, alive and unharmed, not all of her power would protect her. Not all her power.
I can use it, woman. You told me so yourself. I can use it against you.